The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
Good afternoon and welcome to Healthy Lifestyle. I'm Lorianne Kasdia. Our goal here at Healthy Lifestyle is to inspire, educate, and empower you to fulfill a healthy emotional, spiritual, and physical life so you can feel empowered to live the life you have always wanted and dreamed. As we talk about all the time, we are here to serve one another. This is one of the many ways that I try to serve everyone out there is by providing you with some information to empower you so that you can take some steps to take better care of yourself and others in your life. So today, we are very fortunate to have from the Northwell Health System, Dr. David Bernstein. He is Chief of Liver Diseases for that Northwell Health System, and we are very privileged to have him on today. Thank you so much, David, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure, absolutely our pleasure. So let's just dive right in about this, because I understand May 31st was a very, very important date for you.
Absolutely.
And for us, actually.
I think for all of Long
yes,
Island.
Yes, yes, yes.
So we've had a pretty robust liver program at Northwell Health now for 20 years. And on May 31st, we opened up the first and only liver transplant program here on Long Island, serving the folks of Nassau, Suffolk, Queens, and even Brooklyn. So it's really very, very exciting for us to have this program now here to serve the folks here on Long Island.
It actually, so the first and only liver transplant location, that's very prestigious, quite frankly, and good that we have it right in our backyard.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so you've been doing research, and your group has. Let's talk about what Northwell Health does and what you specifically do, because you're the head guy.
So
you're leading the parade here.
But you know what? There's so many other people that are doing so much, so I don't want to take any credit for all the work that everyone else really does, because they're a great group, big great group.
Yeah.
So you know, we've been very involved in multiple facets of liver disease now for 20 years. This August.
Wow.
So first and foremost is really just taking care of people, you know, with all forms of liver disease, whether they have mild disease, more advanced disease, you know, or need a transplant. Second is we do a lot of clinical research. So we do a lot of work on various diseases, trying to figure out cures or best ways to treat them. So our biggest success has probably been hepatitis C. We were intimately involved in participating in the studies which led to the approval of the medications which now cure that disease. So where that was the most common thing we used to see, we quite frankly don't see it so much anymore.
Yeah.
And when we do, easy to treat.
So what's the cure for hep C?
So there are multiple medications that are now available. As a class, they're called direct-acting antiviral therapies.
Okay.
Without going into the specific names, because I don't think that's so important. You know, in general, it's...
I can't pronounce most of them anyway.
Neither can I.
Okay, good.
Right? So it's sometimes they're one pill a day, sometimes they're three pills once a day for either 8 or 12 weeks. With almost no side effects and cure rates that are in the 98% to 99% range.
Wow, that is totally amazing.
I think it's great because there are two sets of folks now with hepatitis C. There are what are called the baby boomers.
Okay.
Born between 1945 and 1965. They're the ones that got the disease years ago because they lived in a different time. Didn't know they had it.
What causes it?
It's some sort of blood-to-blood contact.
Okay.
So the most common ways of getting hepatitis C... any type of intravenous drug use in the past, any time you may use intranasal cocaine, or any time you got a blood transfusion, really before 1991 when we couldn't test. So if you think of how many people that is, you know, whatever people may have done or received in their teens in the 60s or 70s when times were different, they were at risk. So we find those people now. In fact, New York State has the only law which mandates the offering of screening by doctors for all people born between those ages. New York State is way ahead of the rest of the country.
Okay,
that's
one thing they're way ahead on.
Yeah, it is, exactly right. You know, might as well take credit where credit is due.
You absolutely should.
So that's one group. But then there's the second group, which is a little bit more worrisome. And that's with the opioid epidemic that we all know about. So now we're seeing for the first time in my career and all over the country, people who are getting acute hepatitis C, meaning they're using these opiates and they're getting disease. And those are usually teenagers and people in their 20s. And so while we're conquering it in all the baby boomers, there's a huge number of folks who are getting it now who are young. And they are treatable and curable if we can get them in.
If they can come in. So it's curable. I love that. What are the symptoms?
So most people with hepatitis C have absolutely no symptoms. They feel fine. And most people with hepatitis C, when they go to their doctor, the lab tests are all normal. So if you don't think about it, you're not going to find it.
Right.
So what do you have to ask? It's not dormant. It's active.
It's active.
It's just you usually
but
don't.
But you just don't know.
You don't know until it's too late. And then all of a sudden you come in, you're yellow, your belly's big, you may have a cancer, you may vomit up blood. I mean, there are a lot of things that can happen. So it's a little scary. So it really requires two things. One, a good history by the doctor, to be honest. Did you ever use drugs? Do you have a tattoo? Lots of people have.
My butterfly tattoo.
I'm not saying a word. So do you have anything pierced other than your ears? You know? Do you get manicures and pedicures and not bring bring your own equipment and leave it there?
Right.
And
that's why we have that law.
That law is again for hepatitis C.
Oh, okay.
And so that's it. If someone's going to complain, they generally complain that they're tired. But you know, the reality is, if you ask 100 people, have you ever felt tired in the past 6 months? 200 hands go up.
Yeah, 200 hands go up. Yeah, I gotcha.
So therefore, you know, it's hard to say. So you have to really think about it and ask about it. And that's the whole idea behind the law, right? The law is offering screening to people because there are no symptoms. So it's termed the silent epidemic. And it has far more people with Hep C in the country than HIV.
Wow.
But people just don't know. You know, and if they can get identified, they can be cured.
And what are the results of having Hep C? You had mentioned a couple of them.
So you can develop, worst case scenario, you can develop cirrhosis and all its complications. You know, what are those complications?
Can you survive from that?
You can.
Okay.
But what tends to happen is you can develop these complications. You get confused. You can have bleeding called variceal bleeding. You can develop fluid in the belly. You can develop liver cancer. And you may need a transplant or develop liver failure. So it used to be the number one reason why people in the United States were listed for transplantation in the United States, hepatitis C. Because of these new medications, which only became available in 2014, end of 2014, beginning of 2015, the number of people who need transplants from hepatitis C has dropped precipitously.
After 12 weeks of...
Oral therapies. You know, in the past, before 2014, the drugs that people took were injectable. They were miserable. They didn't work so well, and people got real sick on them. So there's still a gestalt out there, when you look on the internet, that these therapies
we'll
are terrible.
Circle back to that.
Right. That these therapies are terrible, but the reality is they're not. It's night and day. I mean, most people have no more symptoms than if you take a Tylenol. They just feel great.
No symptoms. And we're going to go back to having Hep C.
Yeah.
You have no symptoms. Your doctors aren't picking it up. You're not, because they're not trying, but they don't pick it up. The tests aren't picking it up. What do we ask for? What are we supposed to do so we can protect ourselves to find out, do we have it so that maybe we get on these meds that can cure it in 8 to 12 weeks? Gosh, some psoriasis, you can't cure that quickly.
Right. I mean, the simple thing is just when you next see your doctor, ask to be tested. Just ask to be tested.
Gotcha.
And it's a quick test. You know, the doctor will get it back in a day. And if you have it, great, you'll be treated. If you don't have it, you don't. It's a blood test.
Blood test. So
simple blood test.
So why aren't our doctors, and I'm not putting blame on anybody, but why aren't our doctors doing that with all the other gazillion blood tests that they do when we typically go in and get annuals? Because, I mean,
you know,
they test for everything. I don't even know half the stuff they're testing
for. I think
for.
Many are. I think there's a learning curve, right? So there are so many physicians out there. And if you take who the first line folks are, the first line folks are primary care doctors or internists. They are overwhelmed with every other thing that people are coming in with.
Sure.
And this is truly relatively new. So the world has changed in the past 5 years, and it takes time. I think they are checking in those that they're required to by law, those born between 1945 and 1965. I think they are checking when there are risk factors that they've identified.
Mm-hmm.
I think they are checking when people have abnormal liver tests and they follow up. You know, the people who don't get tested are those that you can't identify an obvious risk factor, fall out of that age group, and have all normal liver tests. You know,
Yeah. So you're advocating for us to advocate for ourselves and ask the question of the doctor, could you test us if you fall into that 1945 to 1965
period? And it requires, you know, people to be really honest with the doctors. Right? Yeah. If you're born between 1945 and 1965, doesn't matter what you may have done the rest of your life, you're at risk.
Because
even when you were growing up and you went to the doctor's office, if you remember back then, many of the times the doctors gave you an injection, but those were not disposable needles, right? They were reused.
Yeah, that's true.
So if things weren't adequately cleaned, you know, there's a risk.
I remember going to my doctor as a young girl, and he would always scare the bejeebas out of me because he'd take a horse needle out. And I mean, it was humongous. So when he took the real needle out, I didn't care because it wasn't the horse needle. So and the doctor that was for my my children, my two boys, he just cracked me up because he would tell them, I'm going to give you a practice shot. Yeah. And if you don't like that, then we're not going to do it. And they were like, okay, every single time. And it was really a cute little tactic. I really like that because they got their shot. They didn't realize, and they're like, no, I don't like
that. I'm going to have to remember that. That's a good one. I learned something
today. It was good. I wish my doctor would do that with me because I'm terrible about shots. I'm like, don't give me anything. This is really interesting, and you're really on the cutting edge of this. And so you had said something before that just sticks in my head, and I just need a clarification. You said there were some liver mild diseases. What does that mean?
So when we assess the liver, right? There are lots of causes of liver disease, but then the question is, are they really causing a problem? So, for example, hepatitis C can be early or late, not defined by when you got it, but is there significant inflammation or scarring within the liver?
Got it.
You know, hepatitis B, sort of the same thing. Probably the biggest issue or the biggest disease we need to deal with and talk about is fatty liver disease. Right? So fatty liver disease is the most common liver disease in the United States. It affects 100 million people. So that's almost one in three people in the United States.
And what does that mean, fatty liver disease?
It means exactly that. You have fat in the liver. All right? And so then it becomes a spectrum.
I have to put my liver on a diet? You're killing me, Doc.
I'm doing my best. I am doing my best. Right?
So go ahead. I'm sorry.
So, you know, it can be a spectrum from just fat, which is probably benign and nothing to worry about, to fat and inflammation, to fat and scarring, to fat and cirrhosis. So to answer your original question, just fat would be sort of mild, not to be concerned about. But as you develop scarring, you can become concerned. So fatty liver is now the number one reason why people in the United States develop cirrhosis.
So should it have some fat, the liver?
No, it shouldn't have any.
None.
It should not have any.
Okay.
And there are two main predisposing factors, three actually, to fatty liver. One would be being overweight.
Okay.
And so we have a country where lots of people are overweight.
Indeed, we do.
Two would be diabetes.
Okay.
Right? And so more
type 1 and 2?
No, just type 2.
Just type 2.
So almost 90%.
The same.
Yep. Almost 90% of the people who have diabetes have fatty liver.
Okay.
And three is alcohol, which also leads to fat deposition. So right now, the number one and two reasons why people are on list for liver transplant are alcoholic liver disease and what we call non-alcoholic liver disease, meaning fatty liver disease when people just don't drink. And
gotcha.
So those are the folks that have diabetes. Those are the folks that are overweight. And the unfortunate thing is we have no treatments other than diet and exercise and weight loss. While we're doing a lot of research now to try to develop new therapies, but there isn't going to be a magic pill. Everyone wants the magic diet pill that helps them lose weight and all gets better. It doesn't exist, and it won't exist. You know, people have to participate in their care, you know, and watch.
Well, you know, this is the only vessel we get while we're here, so we should probably take care of it, right?
You would think, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would. But for some reason, I don't know why here in America we don't do that. I know when I travel overseas, the diet is totally different. I enjoy eating when I'm in Italy. I enjoy eating when I'm in Australia.
And you can go to Italy and eat all that pasta and walk around and you don't get any weight, don't gain weight, right?
Yeah.
So, A, you're walking around a lot.
Yeah.
You know, B, they don't use any preservatives whatsoever.
Nothing's packaged.
And
over
C, the portions are smaller, yet everyone is sort of happy.
Yeah.
You know,
the portions are,
We're the opposite, right? If you ask for another portion in Italy, they look at you funny.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, you don't need it because once, you know, they give you something that makes sense. So, matter of fact, sometimes they give you it's still too much in my mind. So
absolutely.
It's an interesting
thing. But think what did we get, right?
Oh, my gosh. We get enough for a small village.
We certainly do.
Like, I could eat it for dinner, lunch the next day, dinner the next day, lunch the day after that. It's crazy, right? And, am I right?
And we don't eat healthily, right? We don't have our fruits and vegetables. You know, we eat lots of processed foods, all that soda, non-diet soda, which is terrible for the liver.
Oh, that's just don't even start me on that because, you know, I'm not a proponent of using the chemical type sugar.
Right.
Or sweetener, I should say, because it's not sugar. It's I'd rather have a little real sugar than use any of those chemicals. I think it has something to do with the high level of cancer we have, quite frankly.
Maybe.
Unscientific, not documented. That's just
my personal
opinion. But I don't know, but I'm hoping somebody's out there trying to prove me
There's
right.
a lot of work being done, I can tell you.
Yeah, but and a lot of work is being done here. What's the name of your center for the liver transplants on Long Island?
So the center is called the Sandra Atlas Bass Center for Liver Diseases.
Gotcha.
And it's located in Manhasset. And we actually have a building just for the liver disease program, which opened about 3 years ago.
I have an image, I guess it's from TV or from movies. I don't really watch TV anymore, but from movies where they carry the livers in the little igloos.
And that's actually true.
Really?
They're absolutely true. They send a team out, they get the liver, they put it into an ice bucket, and they bring it back.
How long does that last in that format?
You know, it depends. I mean, there are special ways that it's treated to go, but, you know, 8 to 10 hours.
Wow.
But, you know, you have one team, and this team is run by Dr. Lou Tepperman, who's the head of liver transplant at Northwell Health. He came from NYU, where he built a spectacular program.
Wow.
And so they have two teams. So one team goes to get the liver. They take a plane, and they go, if need be. The second team gets the patient ready, so that when the liver appears, shows up at the hospital, you know, they're all set and ready to go.
You put it back in. What's the percentage of acceptance of these transplants?
So they do 90% to 95%.
Wow, that's amazing.
So there's a lot of pre-work done before they actually put it in. It's only gotten better with newer therapies and newer techniques and immunosuppressive agents.
One more time, please. What did you say?
So newer immunosuppressive agents,
yes,
which decrease the risk of rejection.
Oh, okay.
You know, better therapies. Better technique.
Technique,
you know,
okay.
The surgeons have learned over time and better selection. So the surgeons can actually look at the organ before they put it in and say yes, no. And so if you can assess the organ before you put it in, that it's okay, you're less likely to have problems afterwards. Sort of makes sense, right? You're not going to put a washer that's leaking into something and think you're going to solve the problem. You need it to be right.
Wow.
And so all these things can now be done really rapidly so that you can make that assessment in really a few hours at most.
So does that happen before they start prepping the
Absolutely.
Patient?
Yep.
So while they're picking it up, the team
picking it up yep.
is determining if it's we're good to go, start prepping.
Correct. Exactly right.
And they literally fly back in and...
So the behind-the-scenes communication is unbelievable, the coordination that's required. And again, you know, That's done by Dr. Tepperman, who's the head of liver transplant.
Wow.
He works
for your department, right?
Yeah, we work together.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what he does behind the scenes then in the operating room is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, that really is.
Yep.
You know, one thing I've noticed consistently, and I'm going to ask you to stay for the second half of this show today, what I've noticed consistently with Northwell Health is really cutting edge, really big teamwork, great communication with patients. It's just basically a base level for everybody in the Northwell Health system. Would that assessment be pretty accurate?
Oh, I think absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I really think there's a commitment from Northwell Health to give the best possible care in the best possible way so that patients are satisfied. And really, I've been here now 20 years. August will be my 20th year.
Wow. And congratulations.
Thank you. And so really, they brought top people from around the country, to medical people, to run the program. So the standard of care that's given is phenomenal. And not only the standard of care, but all the research that is going on, both basic research and clinical research, to develop new therapies to help the patients. And, you know, what it's doing for Long Island, I think, is transformative.
It's great, and it's right in our backyard, so we're very, very fortunate to have that back. Now, when we come back for the second half, I need to ask you a question, why they call you the investigator. I love that. You have, like, do you have theme music?
I didn't know they were called. I didn't know that.
They call you the investigator.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, look at that. So we need to explore that when we come back.
Sounds okay.
All right, we will be right back. You are listening to Healthy Lifestyle with Lorianne, and we will be back in a few just to continue this conversation and enlighten you on this wonderful, wonderful new liver transplant on Long Island Center. Thank you so much, and we'll be right back. Back to Healthy Lifestyle. I'm Lorianne. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas on topics you would like to hear discussed here, right here on Healthy Lifestyle, email us at healthylifestylewithla@gmail.com and follow us on social media at Healthy Lifestyle with LA. LA is for, obviously, Lorianne. Somebody just recently sent me an email asking me what LA stood for, and if we were in Los Angeles. And I said, no, my name is Lori Ann, so it wasn't really magical. Anyway, if you have any ideas that you'd like us to talk about, please, please email, or if any questions about our guests, please reach out. We will get you in touch with our guests anytime you ask. So thank you again for coming back with us. And we are here today with Dr. David Bernstein. He is Chief of Liver Diseases for the Northwell Health System. And we've been having really interesting conversation about Hep C, the new liver transplant location at the Sandra Atlas Bass Center for Liver Diseases. Is it Bass?
Bass
Center.
Yep.
For liver diseases, and right here in Manhasset, you said, right?
It's in Manhasset,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, right in our backyard. I think this is great. So let's circle back. I did tell you in the last segment I wanted ask this question. So you're known on the Northwell Health system on the website as the investigator. Why do they call you that? I think that's so cool.
I ask a lot of questions.
That's a good thing. I like
that. It's probably that I just ask a lot of questions. But my guess would be, and this is the first time I'm actually hearing this from you after 20 years, is that we have a very large clinical research program where we investigate lots of therapies for different diseases. So we talked a little bit about hepatitis C. You know, we're doing a lot of work now in looking for cures or other treatments for hepatitis B. We're doing a lot with fatty liver disease. You know, we do some work with a hereditary condition called hemochromatosis. We're looking into certain autoimmune diseases, autoimmune hepatitis or primary biliary cholangitis. And interestingly enough, Long Island has some of the highest incidences of autoimmune liver diseases in the country, and no one knows why.
Huh.
So maybe that's why, because we're really doing a lot of this type of investigation, and then we usually turn it into hopefully things that help the patients. You know, a lot of presentations around the country of our work, a lot of publications around. So it's maybe that's the rationale for the name. I prefer to think that I just ask a lot of questions and bother people.
I don't think you bother people at all, because you seem to keep asking questions until they have answers, and I really respect that. I love that. You're the author of over 100 publications, 10 book chapters, and you've been the principal investigator. Yeah. Still love that. You need a theme song. In more than 200 clinical trials. That is amazing. And you've been actually published in the New England Journal of Medicine and the Lancet, right?
Yes, yes.
Wow. And what were you published for?
Those were studies leading to medications that cured hepatitis C.
Amazing. And there are different hepatitis. This is new to me.
Yes.
So there's B and C, and there's a D?
So there are actually five.
Okay.
Right? So the most common is A.
Okay.
Right? And hepatitis A, you've probably read about. there, whenever there are outbreaks at a restaurant, in a deli related to something, it tends to be hepatitis A. A comes from eating bad foods.
Okay.
Right? And the good thing about A is it doesn't become chronic. You get sick and get over it and you're done.
So it's, right? It kind of feels like a stomach flu.
It can be anything. Yeah. Right? But so that's A. Hepatitis B, and we'll just go down the alphabet because that's how they're named. B is essentially sex and drugs in the United States.
And rock and roll? No.
It could be. You know, very easy to get.
Okay.
Very easy to get. Of the three big viruses in the United States, HIV, Hep C, and hepatitis B, hepatitis B is far and away the easiest one to acquire. You know, you can get it from any body fluid.
Okay.
And that, in adults, usually you get sick, but then you get over it.
Okay.
But about 1-2% can develop chronic disease.
Okay.
Amongst people who come from overseas, the transmission is slightly different. You know, for example, much of Asia. So 10-12% of people from China and Korea have hepatitis B, and they got it from their mother at time of birth. And those folks don't get sick. They just get the disease, and it stays with
dormant.
Them. Not dormant.
No.
This is, some can be, you know, that we call them active or inactive, but we don't use the word dormant.
Right? Oh, no.
They all have some disease. Sometimes they have mild, as we talked about earlier.
Yep.
Sometimes they go on to develop cirrhosis and liver cancer. And there are no cures for hepatitis B, but we can treat and suppress it.
Okay.
And so that's a good thing. Hepatitis C, we talked about.
Right.
D is far less common, tends to be more amongst folks who are from the Mediterranean region. More related to intravenous drug use, but we just don't see it. And perhaps the newer one, which is becoming more and more common, is E, like Edward, which is like hepatitis A. You get that from food, and you get it mostly from pork products or traveling to certain areas of Mexico, Pakistan, India. And that condition has a predilection for pregnant women in their third trimester, and it can be terrible if it happens.
Okay.
No vaccine, no treatment. Usually if you get it, you get sick and you get over it. So
does it affect the baby? Because third trimester is kind of important.
Usually not.
Okay.
Right?
Good.
But if you, those, so those are the big five.
Gotcha.
You know, of the hepatitis viruses.
Look at that. That's just totally amazing. So I find that, you know, whenever anybody gets sick, they immediately go to what you've famously coined Dr. Google. What are your
Dr.
thoughts
Google.
On that?
I'm not a fan.
Not a fan. Why is that?
So I think the internet is a phenomenal resource, but I also think it's a frightening place to go. You know, people sort of find what they want to find.
Yeah.
And it creates a lot of anxiety and fear because basically any condition can have any symptom. So people think they have all kinds of horrible things. And they put in a few keywords, pop out with a diagnosis, panic, call up, you know, showing up. And, you know, I think medicine is very different than other fields, if you will. You have to think about it. So people have to tell you what's wrong. You have to come up with a plan of how you're going to approach it.
Right.
Send off appropriate tests, not a million tests, but appropriate tests.
Right.
Analyze the data and then come up with what you think the problem is and develop a solution. You know, and that's very different than putting a couple of keywords in at 2 a.m. when you're having a little anxiety attack and finding you have that. So, you know, we really tell our patients to avoid what we've termed Dr. Google.
Yeah.
You know,
I love that terminology because, yeah, you can find an answer in any industry, especially medicine, law, to support your position. I mean, we see
and,
that
and
in
I
media
think,
right now. You can find a channel that supports your position and just watch that. And you think that the whole world thinks that
and
way.
And wouldn't it be nice if we just left off a fax?
Oh, stop yourself now. That's just crazy.
Wouldn't
now
that
you're
be
talking
something?
Craziness.
Yeah, well, I speak from medical component, you
yeah,
know?
There
and
you
we
go.
Try to extrapolate that to everything else.
Absolutely.
The facts are very important.
Facts are important because most facts are immovable.
Right.
And that's when it doesn't become a perception.
Correct.
And there's no interpretation. A fact is a fact.
And I think people have to realize just because something is written doesn't mean it's true. You know, and so in medicine, when you go on and look, you know, you don't know who's writing something.
Which reminds me of a commercial I think you and I talked about before we started today. It was on TV about you know, they got it off the internet, so it has to be true. And
right.
And supposedly this guy was from France, and he just said bonjour. Mm-hmm. And so if anybody speaks French, obviously that's not the proper pronunciation of it. But I think that clearly defines why Dr. Google shouldn't really be utilized for that. And that's why we have professionals doing it.
Right.
Yeah. My brother is a neonatologist. And the one thing he said to me, out of a gazillion things he said to me, but this always stuck with me, was that when he was a younger doctor, he used to take all of the tests. And as he learned more about his craft, his profession, he then was able to narrow down based on symptoms, right, which tests of the gazillion tests he could have sent you to. And then it's more refined. So he doesn't have to do all the tests. And that, to me, goes to something that I'm going to ask you a question about. Having experience in the industry, having specialists like you and your team are specialists with liver diseases. Why would anybody go anywhere else?
Well, you know, I think it depends what they need. A lot of the stuff that we do,
right,
and a lot of the things that we see can be handled by the local gastroenterologists who are very well trained in this.
Sure.
When you reach a certain point where there are questions or the disease isn't so common or anything, then they absolutely should be sent to a liver specialist. You know?
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of liver doctors in the country, which is, you know, maybe part of the problem. There are, I would guess, less than 1,000 liver doctors in the United States.
Wow, that's a very big specialty.
And if you think it has 100 million people who have liver disease and you have 1,000 specialists, it's impossible for everyone to see a liver doctor. But when you reach a certain point, they absolutely should. I mean, so take hepatitis C. That was a disease that was only seen by liver disease folks and gastroenterologists.
Okay.
And treated when we had these older therapies. Now, as long as the person doesn't have advanced fibrosis or cirrhosis, the internists can treat this.
Gotcha.
You know, they're giving them a couple of pills for 8 weeks or 12 weeks,
right,
and they're curing, and everybody's happy. So familiarity is very, very important.
That's why education is...
Education is key to everything.
Key.
You know, and so we are part of our job at the center. So in addition to caring for patients, in addition to doing research, you know, the third major part of our mission is education. And so that education is to a broad audience. You know, we try to educate the people in the community about liver disease. We try to educate the medical students, and we're very involved in the Zucker School of Medicine at Hofstra.
Sure, yeah.
We educate our residents, our fellows, other doctors around the community, pharmacists, who I think are really a key to what we do, and
totally
I believe a resource that is underutilized, and we should, because they're right there in the face.
Yeah, they're in the trenches, right with the patients at their most vulnerable, especially when they're picking up meds.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that we hired a pharmacist in our center 5 years ago. She is phenomenal. I mean, she talks to the patients and goes over all of the medications, goes over the different drug-drug interactions, including the over-the-counters that people take. And I can honestly and unequivocally say that I don't know how I practice medicine well in the absence of having a pharmacist there to really help. It makes such a big difference, and the patients love it.
Yeah, well, they really know their stuff. And
absolutely.
When I have a question about meds, I actually ask the pharmacist. Yeah. I don't ask the doctor, not that the doctor does or does not know, but they're right there.
I mean, I do it
access
on a regular basis.
Yeah.
I go in and say, you know, can I give this medication? What are the interactions? Because the electronic medical record doesn't really help you. But the pharmacist really does, and it's the level that has, I think, made care better and safer for patients.
Yeah, I know the pharmacist I use consistently, and was able to catch something that would have possibly had some side effects, yeah, for me that he knew that, you know, I would probably have based on other meds that I was taking at the time. And it's that kind of professionalism and that kind of knowledge base that you become to rely on, not being a medical person. You know, I might play one on TV, yeah, but I don't, I am not a medical person in any way, shape, or form. I mean, I like researching and not on Dr. Google, though. Just that's
no,
for
please
you.
Avoid Dr. Google.
Yeah. I like to research.
And having said that, there are some really good websites.
Absolutely.
Where you should go, but you need to know where you're going. I don't want to poo-poo everything. There are some
Absolutely.
Phenomenal places, but you need to know where you're reading.
Well, when
and
I
where
learned,
it comes from,
I totally agree. When I got certified as an herbalist, I got certified because I was intrigued mm-hmm. with that information, and I utilize it at my house. But I was told three different sources. If three different sources say similar things, you might be onto something. So I've always used that rule, even Western medicine, Eastern medicine, three sources. So if you get three different reliable, well-known sources to say the same thing, you might be on track. Then go to your professional if you have to do it in that order. I personally go to my professional,
right,
and they tell me.
And I think the key to what you just said is that you go to the professional.
Yes.
Because that's really what you need. Because as you said, your brother, you know, medicine is truly an art.
Sure, yeah.
And the more you do it, the more you learn, the more you realize how to pick things up and what you don't need. I would say I do the same thing. I order far fewer tests than when I first came out, because you have a comfort level.
Exactly.
And you know how to recognize things and you can diagnose it quickly. It's no different than a mechanic or anyone else who comes to fix something in your house. The more they do it, they can hone right in on the problem. Don't need to do 1,000 other things. You know, and it's an art. And the more experienced you are, the more you learn, the better you become at it.
It's just logical. The more experience you have, obviously you should be able to identify things faster. I can relate to this. When I had colitis back in the 90s, nobody could identify what it was. And I kept going from doctor to doctor to doctor to doctor. Had all kinds of answers of what it was, from being in my head to, you know, other things. And then I happened to be recommended to go to this one GI guy, and he was, as soon as I walked in, I was telling him my symptoms. He goes, "Oh, I know exactly what you had." Like he was getting up, making a cup of coffee. Yeah, no, I know exactly what you have. Bam, nailed it. Gave it a name. We went on to do things that would make it better.
Right, and you felt better because he found it.
Yeah, but
or
you
she?
Know, it's the
you felt better because he or she. You're confident in that person.
Yeah.
And you develop a nice relationship, you know, based upon mutual trust.
And the thing, exactly. The thing that's the worst thing is the not knowing.
Right.
Once you know, then you can take a plan of action.
Correct.
But until you know, you can't do anything.
Yeah. And that causes anxiety and panic.
Yes, frustration, without a doubt. And that's why I got into herbalism, because mm-hmm. I was going to find something that was going to make me feel better, because that is not fun to have colitis in any way, shape, or form. I mean, thankfully, I haven't had it in years. So
good for you.
We've been good. We've been good. But that was dietary changes, you know, mm-hmm. the whole nine yards. There was a lot of work to be had.
Yes.
But it took a long time for us to develop having colitis. So it was an interesting experience, let us just say. Interesting.
I'm glad you're better.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. Well, I'm glad that you have the new liver disease center. I think that's great. It's in Manhasset. If you had to tell one thing, you could tell everybody, all of our listeners, one thing that would be most important to you to communicate to them right now, what would that be?
I mean, I would just say that liver disease is common, but most people don't have symptoms. It's truly the silent epidemic. You should be proactive and ask about, you know, this condition when you see your internist or primary care provider. And 99% hopefully will have absolutely nothing. But if you find out you have abnormal blood tests or there's some concern about fatty liver, you should just be evaluated. Don't be afraid to get that evaluation.
It's just a blood test, right?
Blood tests are ultrasound, usually non-invasive, because I can tell you, having been doing this now for more than 25 years, when I first started, there were almost no treatments for any of these diseases. 25 years later, there are treatments for almost all of these diseases.
Wow.
It's really been one of these fields that has taken off as far as research and ability to help. When I first started, fatty liver didn't exist, and now it's 1/3 of the American population, and we're working. So ask, and then any questions, go to your doctor and ask more questions, and if you need a liver specialist, you should find one.
Great advice. And the Northwell Health System is right here on Long Island.
Not only
right
here, we're all over Long Island.
Yeah.
You know, we have branches all throughout, and, you know, you're probably never more than 20 or 30 minutes from it. The places are all looking nice. The care, I think, is excellent. And we're all connected.
Yeah.
So seeing one means you're really just being a part of this system. that is striving to do the best for the people in our community.
That's really, really good advice. And if you're not in this area, in the New York metropolitan area, doesn't mean you can't use the system and reach out to get more information and speak to these wonderful doctors like Dr. David Bernstein. So I really encourage you to take yourself seriously and be your own advocate, and just ask. If you were born between 1945 and 1965, ask the doctor just to do a screening. It's a simple blood test, no different than all the other blood tests. They can do it along with the annual blood tests, I'm sure, right, Doc?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a really good thing. I hope to have you on again.
I'd be happy to come back. I think there's a lot to say. I really appreciate your interest in what we're doing.
Love what you
and
do.
I just want to emphasize that it's a team. I may be here speaking, but we really have a team of all sorts of health professionals working together to care for folks.
Which is not unusual to hear from the leadership at Northwell Health System. So you guys are a bunch of really amazing professionals who respect one another. And that goes to why you are discovering so many treatments and helping so many people, because you really care. There's an honest, true caring from every single person and professional that comes from the Northwell Health System that I've spoken to right here on Health.
I thank you. That's
lifestyle.
Really what we're striving for.
Yeah. Well, clearly you're succeeding. So thank you so much for joining us today, Doc.
Thank you. It's an absolute pleasure.
And thank you for joining us today on Healthy Lifestyle. My heart is always lifted by sharing this time with you. And I want to ask you the question I've been asking this summer for you to think about is, how will you help someone this week? Think about a person in your life who's struggling in some way. And maybe one of your friends is finding it hard to get over a broken relationship, or they're having some difficulties with a family member. They're struggling. They're trying to adopt a healthier lifestyle habits. You need to be their cheerleader, something like that. Something little like that really goes a long way. You just never know what a smile will do for someone else and lift up their spirits and change their whole direction of the day, holding a door open. Just a little something. It doesn't have to be really large. But once you're clear on whatever that action is, make plans to follow through and do it a couple times this week if you can. In the meantime, join us next Saturday right here on Long Island News Radio 103.9 at 3 p.m. In the meantime, follow us on social media at Healthy Lifestyle with LA. Remember, do a little something for yourself too. Every day it starts there. It doesn't have to be big, but definitely take a moment for yourself. Create the habit. Thank you again for joining us on Healthy Lifestyle. I'm Lori Ann Casdy. Until next time, show up for you and show up big.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.